Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hello, I'm Josh Widdicombe.
And I'm Rob Beckett.
Welcome to Lockdown Parenting Hell, the show in which Rob and I discuss what it's like to be a parent during lockdown, which I would say can be a little tricky. So, in an effort to make some kind of sense of the current situation...
and to make me feel better about my increasingly terrible parenting skills...
each episode we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how well they're coping.
Or hopefully not.
And we will be hearing from you, the listener, with your tales of lockdown parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, none of us know what we're doing.
Hello and welcome to Lockdown Parenting Hell with...
can you say Josh Widdicombe?
Josh Wigginton.
And Rob Beckett.
Rob Beckett.
Good boy.
There we go.
That was absolutely exceptional. Who was that?
Oh, dear. Oh, I'll tell you what that was in a minute. That was George, who is two. And that is from Jess Bedingfield. Surely not a relative.
Well, do you know what I was going to say? She had a lovely voice.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's because, you know, but I really enjoyed her saying good boy. I felt like I'd been a really good boy. And, you know, should we play that again? Can you play that again?
Yeah, do you want to play that again?
Yeah.
Is this your favourite ever recording of a Bedingfield?
I think
can
so.
You say Josh Widdicombe?
Josh Widdicombe.
And Rob Beckett.
Rob Beckett.
Good boy.
Hey,
how's that? I enjoyed that. I don't know why, but that stirred some emotions in me. The same way as Michael gets fan mail for his voice, I just think that's the best Bedingfield I've ever heard.
Yeah, that is my favourite Bedingfield. Oh, I don't know. I do enjoy the song These Words by Natasha Bedingfield, but it's up there.
Is she part of the Bedingfield clan?
Do email in, Jess, and tell us if you know Natasha
don't
and Daniel.
Email in. Send a voice note.
Send a voice.
How are you, Joshua?
We've made a bad purchase, Rob.
Oh, no.
I went to drop some stuff at the charity shop a few weeks ago. Yep. I took my daughter and I said, you can have one thing from the charity shop.
First mistake.
Yeah. But I thought, you know, nice thing to do.
Yeah.
She settled on a keyboard from, I'd say, about 1985.
Lovely. Very Widdicombe.
An early learning centre keyboard.
Oh, this is so on brand.
And she's not really been into music that much before, but now she's absolutely obsessed with the demos on this keyboard.
What's the point of learning the keyboard when the demo's on there?
Exactly. To the point where Rose was breastfeeding and my daughter came in and said, would you like to listen to some music? Rose has sat there breastfeeding. She's like, yeah. And my daughter just puts the keyboard down and goes... So I reckon I hear this tune 20 times a day, Rob. Not just that one.
It feels like you're constantly on hold. Oh, that's a banger.
It's destroying my life.
Right, you've got options here.
What are my options?
Lose it.
I can't lose it, Rob. Okay, she's just got a baby brother. She's struggling emotionally enough with that. This is her only thing.
Okay. Right, so other options. Is there a volume on it?
Yes.
Can you set it lower? Or like with and put a bit like sort of almost put some sellotape on it so it can't exceed.
No, it's buttons. Let me send you a photo of this as well so okay. You can see right. What we're dealing with.
I want a photo front and back, please, Josh, of this, and I'll tell you how to make this quieter. Because there must be a speaker on it, and then my suggestion would be put some masking tape over the speaker, and it will dull the sound.
Well, you'll see, Rob. You'll see that's not just not possible, mate.
Oh no, what have you got?
Both the flanks are big speakers, Rob.
I tell you what. Stickers. Get some stickers.
Yeah.
And why don't you play a game called, I've got lovely stickers for your new keyboard. And then you can put, when she's putting stickers in it, you could put some over the speaker.
But the speakers are huge, Rob.
Get some Panini stickers.
This is my life.
Also, it's very, is it helpful or does it make it harder to breastfeed? What's Rose's opinion? Because
it does add an energy to the experience, doesn't it?
Yeah, it feels like psychologically you're doing it well and quick. There's a lot of food coming here, a lot of milk.
It's quite like Diddy Kong Racing or Mario Kart or something, isn't it? It's a bit like that.
Oh, Josh.
My life is ruined.
We're working tonight, aren't we, together?
Yeah, the last leg, 10 p.m. Channel 4.
What are we
going
to talk about?
Well, we don't know, do we? What do you think it's going to be in the news? I don't know at this stage of the game.
Basically, Boris has got married.
Oh, yeah, we might cover
that. The sun's out. It's a bank holiday weekend. Everyone's loving life. There is no news.
I wonder if we're going to have a green room, Rob.
Yeah, because it's your first one back. We're under new guidelines.
Under new guidelines. I just... What takeaway are you getting, Rob? I'm already excited about what takeaway I'm getting.
Yeah, they're very honest. Someone said, Rob, you arrive at this point, and what do you want? And they sent me menus for lunch for a week's time. This was last
week.
Did they? I've gone for Nando's. I've ordered a week early. It feels like a fucking wedding party.
It's like when you go to one of those. Have you been to one of these
big
restaurants?
Family lunches.
It's like a big family lunch.
Yeah, you can have a table for 12, but you've got a pre-order, and then you're pre-ordering salmon en croûte for 13 weeks' time.
Now, have you been to these places where you have to order the curry 48 hours in advance?
No, where's that?
So you'll go to a place and it'll say there'll be a special curry that has to be cooked 48 hours in advance.
Who knows that exists until you get there? Actually, I'm going to order that. See you in 2 days.
Yeah, I fancy a biryani on Thursday. Better order it now.
But I'm looking forward to it. It'll be nice. Get out the house.
Are you going to use the word stiff neck?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to say stiff neck as much as I can.
Yeah.
On your show.
Okay, good.
That'll be fun, won't it?
It'll be fun.
And about the 20 people that listen to this. Josh, I've got a confession. I cannot be organised and think about things, and this probably goes back into mental load. It's Lou's birthday in June, right? And also we're having a party for the kids in June because we're allowed 30 people in your garden now, aren't you?
Yeah.
And stuff. So we can invite their schoolmates.
Yeah.
We're having to be quite brutal with the invite list.
Do the kids count?
I don't know. But even with the kids, what we're doing is we're not really inviting family or cousins and stuff on both sides, which seems harsh. Yeah. But then once you start inviting Lou's niece and nephews and my niece and nephews, it gets to over 30 because there's also near enough 30 kids in the class, but then with parents. So it's what we're going to say is come from two and you can leave your kids here. So we're saying they can leave the kids. So that's what we're suggesting. If they want to leave their kids for 3 hours, because we're going to get an entertainer and a bouncy castle, they can. And then that'll keep us under the 30. But because if everyone stays with their kids, we will go over 30, obviously. So we're doing that. But Lou keeps talking to me about it. And she goes, what are you doing that day in your diary? And what I've done is I've downloaded the Euros diary, for the football.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'll be honest with you.
You've got to check
the
Euros diary.
Or the World Cup's on, I can't think of anything else. No. It's we're doing little things for a birthday. And it's like the quarterfinals.
No.
So I'm just I'm sure that'll be fine. And then now, because it's so confusing, my diary, because it's like...
You're like, am I doing Tipping Point or am I doing England versus Austria?
Well, no, if I send you my diary for this day, I'll show you, we can put this on the Instagram. It's like, I can't say yes or no because
Whoa,
I don't know who's...
Rob!
I don't know who's qualified.
Oh, Rob, that is a tough situation to be in.
Yeah, exactly. That is a tough...
What am I up to that day? Well, it fully depends whether... Marcus Rashford can turn it on at international level.
And also, what I'd normally do at a normal party, it would be a free-for-all. So I'd have all my brothers there, my mum and dad, and then I'd invited you guys and all that. And then if you invite enough people that are into the football, you should have the football. But I think what I'm going to do is go in hard, go in early, and just have the football on the telly with kids running about.
Yeah, I think you're going to have to. I do you do this? 2014, I didn't do this at the World Cup, and I regretted it because I missed the first two goals of Brazil 7, Germany 7, Brazil 1, because I was doing Mock the Week. And then ever since, I've refused to put work in during the Euros.
100%, mate. That goes in first and then the book and then the bookings of other stuff.
Yeah.
Because and also as well, what I used to love is when it's really far away and all the games are 11 a.m., that is perfect for a comedian because there's loads of 8 o'clock games.
Yeah.
And what's annoying though, if you do watch the football and it's the summer, you have the back doors open, if you... pause your telly or watch it on delay, it's ruined because you hear people cheering in the gardens.
Yes.
You cannot watch it on delay. So that's why I'm getting a little bit stressed out at the moment, because I had a 6-month-old in the World Cup. And then I ended up looking after the kids when the games were. I told you that when I gave her milk in her ear instead of her mouth because I was watching the football. That was a low point.
But if that had led to a goal, you'd have had to do it every corner.
You know you're the lucky charm. Then she gets to 17 and I'm just still pouring milk in her ear watching the football. It's a long story, but we've won the World Cup ever since.
I always find it, you'll get a comedian, right? And they'll go, I can't believe it. I've got a gig the night of the England semi-final. And I'll think, that is your own fault.
Yes, you know when that semi-final was.
You should have tracked that from 6 months ago. This was all, the information was all there for you to see.
But yeah, they've not sprung it on you.
Yeah.
They've not moved it. This is always there.
I heard about a top level comedian once, Rob, who had a tour show, and he put the match on an iPad behind the speaker at the front of the stage.
How? No way.
Could you imagine?
Did he make a thing of it?
No. So the audience didn't know.
He must be. He's too good at comedy to do that. How can you deliver?
How can you do that? How could you enjoy that?
I remember once, though, because I recorded a game, right? When it was the Euros, right?
Yeah.
I recorded a game that I wanted to watch. I don't know if it was an England game, and because I'd done Mott the Week, because Mott the Week was normally filmed during June, isn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously, I couldn't turn it down. You had to do it. But I recorded the game, and I said to everyone, oh, don't tell me, because I've watched it. I'm going to watch it when I get home. And everyone respected that. No one told me anything. And I got in the car, and I said to the driver, I've not seen the football. I've recorded it. Let me, don't. He went, fine. I went, I'll turn the radio off and that's fine. I went, cool. Thanks, mate. And we're driving along and it's sunny, balmy sunny day. Oh. Put the window down. I sit there and literally at traffic lights. And I thought, how have I done this? I've got for an entire show. Oh, blah, 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 blah. Now, literally, as I drove past, I went, I can't believe it. 1-0. He gave away that penalty in the 83rd minute. We always do that. And I was like, brilliant. Not only do I know the result, I know exactly how and why. So you've got to be careful when booking stuff in. And that's the thing. Normally it was just work you had to worry about, but then kids arrive. And I think the best thing is always to stay in your own house and then you're in control of the telly. You can't. What I'd say is for you, though, it's great with a newborn. We've said this before. Take your phone or your iPad with you wherever you go and then go, I'm just going to take the baby for a walk. And you just sit in the park and watch it.
Yeah. I think a newborn is perfect for the non-England games.
Yes, but when you want to have a drink and get into it, you can't concentrate on a child properly.
No, I went during the 2018 World Cup, my daughter fell over. So she would have been 8 months, just before England-Colombia, the second round game, about 6 p.m. She fell over and hit her head.
Oh, no. A&E?
She was fine, Rob. She was fine. I've never in my life, the thought of, not now, not at this, yeah. not at this... Not at this moment.
Fracture your skull tomorrow.
Come on, mate.
So what happened?
Well, we did NHS 111 and they took us through it. The advice of NHS 111, they did a load of things that we did. She was fine. And then it just slightly overshadowed the game. The build-up. But to be honest, I'm not good with build-up anyway.
No, you're not. In a way, it was a good distraction. In a way, it was better that she hurt her head, just so you could focus on the game rather than worrying the build-up. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Do you want some Instagram messages, Josh?
Yes, please.
Here we go. I'm writing in. This is from Matt, age 33 and a half. Hello, Josh and Rob. I'm writing in as the salty Josh stories have typically focused on him being salty when approached by fans or at work. However, to keep in line with the theme of the podcast, I write in with a tale of salty parenting by Josh on behalf of my sister who doesn't listen to the podcast.
Oh,
wow. But she's told this story and it's got back to us. My sister and husband and nephew live near Josh. I've encountered the infamous dodgy traffic light on many occasions when visiting them. On one sunny morning a few weeks ago, my sister and her husband had taken my nephew to the playground with the big long slides, which Josh often references. My nephew was about to get on one of the big slides when a child pushed in front of him. Oof. Not wanting to discipline somebody else's child, my sister and husband let it pass. However, the queue jumping child's parent then approached. It was none other than Josh himself.
No, she wouldn't have pushed in.
Josh said to them, oh, did she push in front of him? And then proceeded to do absolutely nothing about
it. Not true. Not true.
And no apology on his daughter's behalf. No faux discipline of his daughter, even for show. He just carried on as if nothing had happened. No wonder she doesn't want to put on her coat with suboptimal parenting like that.
Oh, my word.
He's gone in on you here.
That is an accusation. And I'm going to say it is bullshit. Because I tell you what, I tell you my role at the park, Rob.
Yeah.
It is pure, let loads of people push in front of us because I'm too embarrassed to...
You're weak.
I'm weak.
You're
totally
a prison bitch.
Weak.
At the park, you're a park bitch.
Yeah, me and my daughter are park bitch. There is no way that we... If you were to do a tally of queues that we've jumped versus queues that we've been jumped in front of, I reckon we're about a mile behind.
Also, as well, in your defence, you will apologise for something that you haven't done.
Yes, exactly.
You are a very British apologist.
Yeah, exactly. I'm an apologist.
On a more serious note, as a father of two girls, 3 and 1, I've loved
on
the podcast.
On a more serious note? That first accusation was pretty serious, mate.
Oh, well, on a more serious note, as a father of two girls, aged 3 and 1, I love the podcast. It's been super helpful in keeping me relaxed and upbeat, particularly as a one-year-old arrived mid-pandemic. Hopefully, if you print this story, my sister and husband will become avid listeners too. I think they've made...
I don't want liars listening to this podcast, Rob.
I will take liars.
Yeah, fine.
Oh, mildly salty Josh. Oh, it's all kicking off,
here
Josh.
Here we go, yeah.
Bars on planes and mildly salty Josh. I've just listened to the episode where you talk about bars on planes and had to write in. So in a bit of a long story, I came to the
if
podcast.
If this is about being drunk on a plane, then I plead guilty straight away.
All right. Okay. Oh, this is a good one. That is true. You've not even let me say it. Anyway, about bars on a plane, my friend told me when she was listening to this new podcast that you and Josh present, and I mentioned that I'd met Josh and he'd been a bit grouchy.
Oh, well, that's fine.
She laughed and said, so you had a salty Josh Widdicombe encounter. So I started listening and have been a loyal listener since. No kids and don't want them. So listening just reminds me of why my decision is a good one. Back in 2013, after last leg had kicked off, Josh flew Virgin Atlantic. I served him at the gate and he didn't even acknowledge me. Rude, I thought. Now, Josh says he's never experienced a bar on a plane, but that day he came through priority boarding for upper class, which unless he was too posh to queue, meaning he would have been flying upper class and Virgin have bars on their planes. Congratulations on the baby, Naomi.
The only time I've flown and had a bar on a plane was... Not 2013. I think we would have just paid for priority boarding.
Well,
when we had a bar on an Emirates flight, I was going to Australia,
yeah,
for filming the last leg in Australia, and yeah, we drank the whole way to Dubai while we were changing. Not Adam, suffice to say, me, Alex, and the producer Ben, he's not the producer anymore. He is a liability in these situations.
Yeah, and especially you three all come from, I think, I don't know about Ben as much, but you and Alex Brooker have not been brought up with the lifestyle of flying business to Australia on a plane. So you just go fucking feral, yes, don't you, when it's your first...
We got to Dubai and they said, and you're like, you should have told us this 6 hours ago. We get to Dubai, we've been drinking for 6 hours, and they say, just so you know, it is illegal to be drunk in Dubai in the airport. So you're going to need to sober up or at least act sober.
So you had to pretend to be sober in Dubai?
It was genuinely terrifying. To basically be given plied with booze all the way into a dry area where it's illegal to be drunk.
Yeah. It's like being forced to a christening.
Yeah.
In the church, sat at the front. You can't really be drunk in here. What? When you go on the Emirates, they give you a little the little bag, don't they, with goodies in and all that, like moisturizers and stuff and toothpaste. Yeah. When I first flew with them, because I'd never flown like that before and everyone else was like seasoned travelers, like frequent flyers, they didn't even want their bag of goodies. So I nicked them all. I was like Del Boy. I came off that plane with a holdall and I had 10 bags and I wrapped them all up and gave them out as Christmas presents. walking cliche. Right.
Well,
Josh,
do keep the salties coming in. I always enjoy them, even if they are, you know, slightly fabricated.
Yeah, and also I've been out on the piss a lot recently, so I'm sure there's a few salties in the bank for me.
Yeah, I haven't. One day again, I will be out on the piss, and I cannot wait.
We've got an unsalty story from a locksmith here from East London. Josh Widdicombe, great guy.
Splashing the cash around even.
Yeah, he just sent this from his brand new iPhone 10, whatever the new one is, 12, I don't know. Right, Josh, who's on the podcast this week?
Ah, now, Rob, yes. I'm going to say it.
Yes.
You have brought to us one of the great stiff-neck bookings.
I mean,
anyone who saw this listed would never have thought this is a Rob Beckett booking.
Yeah. Do you know what? I just linked up with an author friend of mine online and said, hey, do you want to come on and talk about being a parent and living in Denmark? Living in Denmark? I do really lose my stiff-neck credibility when I call Denmark Denmark by accident.
Genuinely, absolutely fascinating. One of the most fascinating interviews we've done. And
yes.
I'd say of all the interviews we've done, it's the one I've quoted the most to other people, in fact, since we've done it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going, you know in Denmark this? Do you know in Denmark that? I am a bore on the subject now, Rob.
I know, everyone hates me about it. But yeah, Helen's brilliant. She's got loads of good books out about being happy and or sad and living life. And this one's about when she went to Denmark with her husband because his job changed. And then they lived in Denmark for a year. It's called A Year of Living Danishly. And then they were trying for a baby and they were struggling to have a baby. And then when they moved to Denmark, she got pregnant and now she's got three kids. And we spoke to her about bringing those kids up as a freelance journalist and living in Denmark. And yeah, it was great. Really interesting.
Brilliant.
And really funny. And yes, a very stiff neck booking. But maybe Rob Beckett 2.0. Maybe I've got a stiff neck, Josh. Let's get Helen Russell on.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Helen Russell, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're very excited. I'm really overexcited. I've actually nearly fallen out of friends over you and your book, Helen, because I recommended it to so many people. I actually heard my brother today go, oh, not him and that fucking book again. It's just sort of made me feel like I was growing up at home again. A Year of Living Danishly is the book we're talking about. Would it be better for me or for you to introduce what that book is and how it came about, Helen? What do you reckon?
I can explain it. Yeah, so I was living and working for 12 years as a journalist in London. I was at Marie Claire magazine. I was sort of living the London life and then had no intention of leaving, but I was stressed all the time. I was tired, as many people are. And we'd been trying for a baby for as long as my husband and I could remember. We'd had years of fertility treatment, but nothing seemed to be working. We were always so tired and stressed. And then one day my husband came home and told me he'd been offered his dream job working for Lego in Denmark. And we knew nothing about Denmark.
Of course. It's the only job that's in Denmark, isn't it?
It's that or it's Carlsberg.
Bacon.
Yeah, bacon.
Let's get the bacon.
I know this isn't the point, but we will get to it. But I do need to dig down in what his dream job working at Lego was and what his previous job that led to the dream job working at Lego is.
I feel like I can't quite say the previous job because, you know, okay. LinkedIn, all those people. But it was working for a major grocer.
Was it Duplo, the previous job?
Yeah, exactly.
It was Connex.
It's gone up. No, it was working for a grocer who had a lot of food products but were quite tight with them, perhaps. And then he works in environmental stuff. So he got to do that for... He just loved Lego. He's loved Lego since he was little. So it was just, you know, super great for him.
I mean, I'd take a security job at Lego at this stage. Just for the discount.
Could I just ask one more question, then we will move on? Do you ever get any damaged like when I used to work at Waterstones, say a book's cover got ripped, that's dibs, anyone can have that. Do you ever get damaged Lego?
No, because it's quite hard to damage Lego. You can put it through the washing machine.
Wash Lego, is that a thing?
Well, I mean, while I'm on the podcast, I do have children now, and a lot of Lego does end up in pockets going through the washing. You hear a rattle and that's never good.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to your journey from being a journalist in stressed out London.
Stressed out London.
And then your partner got a job in Denmark, his dream job. job for Lego.
Yep.
And you obviously at that point didn't have a job to go to in Denmark, is that right?
Yeah, so that was a bit terrifying. And I quit my job and thought, oh, well, I'll go freelance. And then I thought I'd give it a year and see if I could change the way I lived and get happier. By Denmark had just been voted the happiest country in the world in these polls. And I started digging into that and found out that Danes had been voted the happiest nation in the world going back to the 70s. So I became really interested in this and I started writing for British newspapers as a freelancer about the Danish way of life and then looking at a different area of Danish living each month to see what Danes did differently. So then I wrote The Year of Living Danishly. And halfway through my Year of Living Danishly, I found out that I was miraculously pregnant. And and now I also have twins. So I went on from in the space of...
So your luck ran out.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And Denmark's just been voted the least unhappy place on earth with everyone now with twins.
So, yeah, from thinking I was going to have no children and sort of trying to come to terms with that, in a very short space of time, I had three. And luckily, turns out Denmark's quite good for kids. But yeah, a steep, steep learning curve.
So Denmark, population about 5 million. I checked. I didn't know that. I've watched a documentary on Lego. Of course I have. I'm sure Rob has watched it as well. And they're based in like a small town that's just basically people who work at Lego, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. I live in the middle of nowhere. No, I'm not in the jazzy Copenhagen bit. It is the middle of nowhere in a place called rural Jutland. And yes, there's not that much going on. I mean, we're very excited, like post-COVID, the big four are open again. And the big four are Legoland, Lego House, this place called Wow Park, and the zoo. I mean, there's very little to do.
Wow Park sounds amazing. I mean, you're really setting your stall out if it's just a Ferris wheel, isn't it?
Like, you know, the arrogance.
Yeah, wow. That's not very Danish, is it? Wow Park.
That's true.
And how old are your children now? Sorry, we didn't get their ages.
Yeah, so I have a little ginger child who no one knows where the ginger hair came from, but he is 7 now and my twins are just turned 4. So we are busy.
Oh blimey, that is a busy house. Oh yeah, so it's fairly recently then you wrote the book and you've had about 4 since. You've absolutely, you're banging out books at the rate of children at the moment.
Well, there was a stage where I was just writing a book every time I had a baby and then I thought, well, I don't want another baby. Like, how am I going to do this? But yes, I think, well, because I have to be freelance here because my Danish is still terrible. And working as a journalist, I was a Scandinavia correspondent for The Guardian for a while. But actually, it's quite hard to react to news stories. I'd be asked, like, can I go and cover a bomb going off in Sweden? And I'd be like, no, I've got a shepherd's pie in the oven. It's very hard to do that once you have a kid.
Yeah, so exactly.
Books work quite well for that.
So well, you moved over there. Your Danish is now not brilliant, you say. But presumably you had no Danish when you moved over there, right? Would that be fair?
No, no Danish, no friends, no family. I mean, it was quite a shocker.
What's that like?
Well, I don't often sort of take big risks with bravado, but I somehow agreed to move here. And then my husband left to go to work at 7:30 a.m. because the working day starts at 8 here and ends earlier as well. And I was just sort of in this bleak in the middle of nowhere in January. And it was very much like The Killing, just forests all around. I thought, what have I done? So I think work was a real salvation there of just keeping busy. And that helped me meet people as well and like build up friends around here. So,
of course. Yeah. And do you genuinely believe, though, that a slightly more relaxed way of life helped you get pregnant? Or do you think it was more luck or do you think it had an impact?
Yeah, I definitely think it had an impact because there was... I'd been doing all of the things in London. I'd been, you know, going to St Mary's Hospital and going to Tooting every week, like 3 times a week. I was having all these appointments whilst trying to fit it in and around my really high powered job. And
was it IVF?
Yeah. And then here it was just a different pace of life. However, interestingly, for having the twins, it's very hard to relax enough to get pregnant when you already have a toddler. So that was IVF.
So the first one wasn't IVF, but the twins were IVF.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
When you got there, what were the main lifestyle changes? Because we talk about this more relaxed way of life, but that's kind of quite a nebulous idea because all I know currently is that you go to work at 8 a.m., which to me sounds much, much worse.
Yes, this is true. But you finish at 4. And actually, the average day...
Like an electrician.
Yeah. The average day does 33 hours a week, which is, you know, so much less than I was used to doing in London. And they're quite... there's this more of a mentality of you're trusted to do your job and then leave. There's no presenteeism. And, you know, back in many jobs in London, you know, you're pat on the back if you're still at your desk at 7 p.m. And that's not the case here. Somebody did it in Lego and they got a lecture on time management and a leaflet about efficiency.
Oh, wow.
They love a leaflet. Absolutely love a leaflet. Last stage of the working day. Leave.
Yeah. So there's much more of an emphasis on, you know, you have to leave at 4 o'clock because everybody works. 80% of mothers work. You have to pick your kids up from daycare. And, you know, the men and the women are tend to be involved in the pickup, in making a home cooked meal. Food is very expensive. Eating out is really expensive. So even before Corona, most people are getting home to cook a family meal each night. So there's just more of an emphasis on doing your work, getting home, having a life, doing lots of hobbies as well. That's big in Denmark.
Oh, wow.
And how was it different? Obviously, when you didn't have kids and you were there, you're sort of alone. And I find having kids makes you sort of get into the local community more, where, you know, when you're busy doing your own thing, you don't really notice. But when you've got to find a place for them to learn to swim or to find a nursery and stuff, how was it having a baby in that environment? Is it different to how you saw your friends and families with kids in the UK?
Yeah, for sure it is. And there's not really NCT type stuff. So I didn't have that ready-made friendship group for new parents, so I did have to go out there. And
I'm going to shock you here, Helen. It's not a friendship group. It's people that you are forced to be in a WhatsApp group with until you all decide you don't like each other and never message again. So don't be sold this friendship group though.
Reason Danes are more happy and they haven't got NCT. That's the reason.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of sitting around in cafes, and yeah, it's quite civilized. What I did find though is having twins, and maybe you've had guests on before who similar experience, that you can't actually get to many of the child related activities because you can't get a double stroller anywhere. So I made some friends while I had one child, but when you have twins, it was impossible.
Oh, just because the space. Oh, no, I think you can physically buy one, can't you? Or is it just not the space?
So I measured up. So the Danish pastries, that's another reason they're happier. The Danish pastries are amazing. And I measured up the doorway.
I don't know if I believe you now.
What?
The Danish pastries sounds like you've never moved to Denmark and you're now winging it.
They must have actual names, the Danish pastries in Denmark, yeah, don't they?
They're called Wienerbrød.
There we go. Now we're talking. Give me more of these. Wienerbrød.
Wienerbrød, look, Viennese bread. And there's the Frohsnapper, the frog snapper. There's one called Baker's Bad Eye because it's got this creamy custard goo in the middle.
Oh, wow.
Baker's Bad Eye?
Yeah.
Sounds like something horrific in porn, a Baker's Bad Eye. Sorry to bring the tone down, everyone. So the double stroller, you measured it. There was no space.
I measured the doorway to my favourite bakery before I bought the stroller to check it could still fit in. And it could.
That is commitment to pastry.
Yeah, I was a winner. But I found that lots of the baby activities, I just couldn't manoeuvre it in, or I couldn't carry the babies upstairs both at the same time. Oh. So it's a shocker.
So they would have been, you would have had a three-year-old and then the twins, would that be right?
Yeah. A very angry red-headed three-year-old annoyed at having to share with two babies. Yeah.
And so it's kind of a cafe culture. Is that a kind of way you'd describe it?
Yeah, I think so. And bakeries and coffee, they're big, big coffee drinkers. And so actually this whole idea of this hygge that has become quite famous in the last few years, but that having coffee and cake together is a normal part of the day. So that was nice. And that's good for new parents.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Cause isn't that in winter obviously it's dark so much earlier and in the winter in Denmark that you sort of just try and make the home cozy and you want to stay in and get like warm and cozy rather than going out on the piss like we do in this country.
Yeah, exactly. And the weather it's so bad. It's so cold and dark, maybe October through March.
That's a big part of the year, isn't it? To be happy in.
Yeah. You just cram it all in the summer. But they also let babies sleep outside in their strollers or in their big prams, big kind of Mary Poppins style prams called barnavorns. And they sleep outside strapped in them so they can't escape up until minus 20 degrees. So
no.
It means parents could be inside the cafe just relaxing while the kids are outside.
No.
Freezing.
So they just leave them outside. So is that why they'll just leave them outside to sleep while they're in there having a cup of coffee?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It takes some getting used to, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, there's a bit of I shouldn't really, but everyone else is doing it. Why not? Yeah.
How did it feel the first time you did that?
Oh, well, I was shitting myself. I mean, I was sitting by the window and sort of peeking quite a lot.
Staring through.
Just getting quite jittery on my third coffee of the day because I was so tired. But, you know, they survived. Very good lungs now. Fresh air, good for the skin. So, yeah, that's what they like to do.
And you said that kind of it's quite expensive to eat out or to drink or Can I have some numbers on that?
Yeah, you can have some stats. Yeah.
How much is a pint?
Oh, okay. So I'd say, and maybe I've been out of London for too long, but I'd say a pint can be, you're probably looking at between 7 and 10 quid.
Wow.
It's a lot, right?
That's the middle of nowhere. You're not even in a capital city.
Yeah, not even somewhere good. Yeah. So I think a supermarket shop is about 25% more expensive than in the UK.
Right.
So all the shops are Waitrose.
Yeah, all the shops are Waitrose. and you're also paying really high income tax. So it is a bit of a shocker. But then once you see the welfare system and, you know, the education is all free and even private schools are subsidised. So there's a lot that people are looked after.
Yeah.
Because
they get, from a childcare point of view, is there not a lot, there's a lot of support early on? Is that
yeah.
correct?
Yeah. So you're guaranteed a place in, you know, high quality state run daycare from 6 months old. And so most kids are in daycare before they are one. And that's every day because parents go back to work full time. There's not much of a part time culture so much.
Keep talking. Here we go.
Yeah, well, I know.
I'm getting on the plane.
So sometimes I listen to you guys talking about guilt about sending kids in for not all of the days.
Yeah.
And my kids have gone 5 days a week. I mean, you get 40 hours. So the parents are only working 33 hours.
Yeah, exactly. They just sat there outside for 7 hours
in minus 20.
There's a lot of coffee to drink.
It's a real rota stuff going on with the daycare.
Well, parents are very big into hobbies and they're very big into putting the oxygen mask on first. So I think, yeah, they do have quite a nice life. Parents look after themselves.
Do you think it's a little bit of sometimes, I think as a parent, especially in the UK, there is all this, a lot of guilt and that you constantly go, is my child okay? Is my child okay? And then what you then do is you don't give yourself enough like time for your own self-care, you know, like a hobby or some relaxation. So that actually by a kid staying in daycare a little bit longer and you reading a book or doing some exercise, you'll go into being a parent better because you've had your own time. I think in this country, sort of go, no, we've got to sort the kids out. It's actually worse in a way because you don't have time to chill yourself.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. But as you say, it's because it's what the people around you are doing. So I don't feel bad about it because everyone around me is doing the same. But I'm sure if I was in the UK, I would have a massive guilt about it.
Yeah, of course. And so were they in 5 days a week from 6 months?
The ginger haired one was. because I had to write a book.
well, yeah, because I found that interesting. You don't give away a lot of names. So like your husband's called like Lego Boy or Lego Man and your kids are the ginger one and the twins and stuff.
Yeah, because I just feel like, and it's, of course, it's everyone's individual choice, but I kind of want them to decide when they want to. And also,
yeah,
it's a really small community and I didn't know how my book would be received and I didn't want my husband to lose his job. And now it's kind of published in like 30 countries around the world. And it would just be a bit awkward if...
Yeah. I mean, Lego Man, it could be about 20,000 people in just your village.
Yeah.
Everyone works at Lego.
Yeah.
Wow, Park Man, when he changes his job.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Want to temporarily restore definition in your jawline where it's been lost over time? With Juvederm Volux XC, you can get a non-surgical jawline treatment that adds volume for a smooth contour and to reduce the appearance of jowls in one in-office treatment with little downtime. Juvederm Volux XC injectable gel is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergic to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Hello, Alan Davis here, inviting you to join me by listening to a new podcast, Seven Pillars. Each episode, I'll be talking to a famous guest to discuss seven significant cultural influences, inspirations, or experiences. Seven things that help shape them, that they loved, or that they return to again and again and hold a special place in their life. From films and music, books, food, places, and memories, the podcast ask seven questions that will spark stories for the guests and give the listener an insight into the minds and passions of some of the most interesting comedians, actors, writers, philosophers, and raconteurs around. Starting with comedian Romesh Ranganathan in episode one, which is out now. And in the coming weeks, we have Hollywood actor Walton Goggins, comedy legend Joe Brand, author and intellectual heavyweight Jay Perini, and many more. You can find the show by searching Seven Pillars on all podcast platforms.
And what point in the year, because obviously you've gone there and you say like it's your husband's gone to work and it's 8 a.m. and you're in the middle of a forest, basically, on day one. How long did it take before you thought, this is for me, I'm going to stay?
Well, I think I thought it was quite nice.
I'd say about 200 pages of the book.
By summer, yeah.
It's not an easy convincing, is it, Helen?
I think that's fair, Rob. Yeah, I think it took a while. I think it took really, I had, by the end of my pregnancy, by the end of the year, as it's starting to get darker, I knew I wasn't, my doctor said I wasn't allowed to get on a plane anymore. So then I sort of thought, well, it's going to be more than a year here because I can't go anywhere. And then once I had my son here and realised how good it was for kids. So I think it probably took the whole year to decide, okay, we'll give it another year. But we've only ever said, oh, one more year. And
yeah.
Here we are still.
Oh, really? So do you imagine you'd come back one day?
Well, I'd like to, but I feel as though I haven't really been able to spend much time in the UK because either my twins were really small, so I was only going for overnight for work stuff. And then COVID happened. So yeah. I really feel very out of touch. I need to sort of spend some good time in the UK and just get
it's going really well
here.
Over here. It's going really well. I don't know if you're across the news, but everyone's really
absolutely
happy over
storming
here.
It's
the equivalent. If you were in a pub with your mates and we were trying to convince you to come to our pubs, it's empty with one bloke in the corner smoking. That is all that's happening.
And it smells of wee. Yeah.
And it stinks a piss. But do you know what? We're getting injections. We are good at injecting people in some places. The one thing, though, Helen, because I follow you on Instagram, that looks very stressful living in Denmark with the kids is sometimes if I just go to the park and I try and put them in a mud suit or something. But when it's winter, that just getting myself dressed for a really cold day exhausts me and tires me. But when I looked at your, it was like, I think you had all of the outfits you need for three children, like toddlers and babies to wear. And they were just like thermal trousers, thermal tops, hats, gloves, boots. And then these like waders, all like little fishermen. Like
balaclavas,
It was giving me like an anxiety attack just looking at how many layers a kid needs for that weather.
It is quite stressful, but it's almost like you have kind of selective memory because I've almost wiped that out. That was winter. I'm not going to think about winter's so awful. I'm not going to think about that till next winter. So now we're in springtime where they have to wear wind suits, which just makes me think of farting.
What's a wind suit?
It's like, you know, like your grandma might wear a quilted jacket, a sort of padded but quilted. They wear that top and bottom. Or they wear rain suits, top and bottom.
What's it like at the height of summer then?
Well, actually, no, at the height of summer, it can be really hot, global warming and everything.
Right. That's positive.
Summer, I tried to take the kids home in just their pants. And I thought, it's Scandinavia, people are quite liberal. It's a 5-minute walk. I thought they can just walk in their pants. And the teacher told me I couldn't do that. So they are quite rule abiding and that there is some line I had crossed there, but it can get hot.
You can't wear pants. It's a bit stiff necky, I'd say, from a point of view of this podcast. They love a rule.
Yeah, they do really love a rule. Yeah. But I think that's why they did quite well on COVID at the beginning. Or not having such a bad response to COVID because everybody just followed the rules and did as they were told.
Yeah,
especially in the winter that you stay in anyway. Lockdown is basically 8 months of the year.
Well, the big four are shut, Rob, so what are you going to do?
The big four, what are you going to do? If Wild Park's shut, I'm not socialising. I don't know about you.
That's how they stopped COVID. They closed Wild Park, that was it.
And so what are other parents like with their kids compared to British? Because in Britain, if a kid's being naughty, you won't tell them off because it's too British and awkward. But would a Dane say, tell your kid off if they're breaking the rules?
It's so weird because Danes are quite private. So usually they won't. But I seem to have a face that invites people offering their opinions on stuff because I do get told off quite a lot. But I know that like the cliche is that Danes will not interfere with your parenting. but I get a lot of advice.
Oh, really?
So I don't know. Yeah. Yes. Because there's rules about how warm you're supposed to dress a child, you know, like the windsuit or the snowsuit, yeah. or your balaclava's not on enough. And I get quite a lot of feedback about that, but I don't know that that's universal.
Do you think there's like a different, I know it comes about culturally or whatever, but do you think the Danish personality is different to the British personality? Like, could you imagine a lot of these things catching on in the UK, even, you know, the 33-hour week or whatever, or is it a kind of inbuilt thing in the Danish psyche?
That's really interesting. I think there's definitely a bit of that, because they have this thing called Jantes law, which is this idea that everyone is equal. So you're not supposed to show off. So pretty people who come from the UK or the US to work in Danish companies, for example, get quite teased about their CVs, because your CV is all about showing off, and that's just not done here. And I think as well, interestingly, looking at schools, as I have been recently, since the Second World War, education and democracy have been quite intertwined in Denmark, because it was occupied by the Germans. And so there was a real emphasis on teaching kids to question authority, because they didn't want to find themselves in that position again. So interestingly, you know, Hitler has made Danes quite quite questioning of authority and quite independent, but not thinking they're better than anyone else. So it's quite a different psyche, I'd say, to the UK one.
Do you notice your kids are more Danish than they are English now?
Yeah, it's exhausting.
Mummy, my balaclava's not all right. Sorry, halfway through that, I tried to do a Danish accent and I had no idea what one was, so I just did posh English. sorry, Helen.
Like Margot from The Good Life. Everyone is equal, so teachers and parents aren't treated with any reverence, you know, because they're older. And also they don't call them like toddler tantrums in Denmark. They call it the boundary years. So it's very much about, oh, you're just testing your boundaries, and that is seen as a good thing. So I think, yeah, my kids definitely know that they can push and question things. I'm sure that is good in the long run, but it is quite tiring.
Yeah. I suppose you'd notice more. I don't know if you've got like friends of kids or your aunt, with any nieces or nephews, but when they get together, how different they might be because of COVID and stuff like that. I think that's when it'll really show that sort of culture clash that you just sort of are used to now.
Yes.
With things like that. But I think that's a bit of a PR spin, isn't it? Just testing their boundaries as they're like screaming in your face and hitting you. They're just testing the boundary.
Yeah. I think what's also frustrating for me as a writer is that the emphasis on reading is so much later here. So kids don't learn to read properly till they're about 8. And I'm sure I was like smashing through books at that age, but they're just very much like working on the social stuff first. And yeah, that's great. But
I think that's very important though, because even like my daughter's school, there's some kids there that can like fluently read and write, because they went to these preschools where basically they tell you by the leaving preschool and you start school, you can sort, I can't remember what they're called, but like they try and get you to read and writing level. So it's like some parents are so really obsessed with that, but I'm like, it's such a small part of what makes someone like a sort of a good, like a successful person grown up, isn't it? The reading and writing, it's the social skills, the sport, the being able to read, social interactions and stuff like that. I think that's in Denmark they sort of prioritize that over the reading, because most people could read and write by, you know, no one's urgently needing to read or write by 5, are they?
No,
you know,
that's, I mean, true.
It's not like a panic station.
That's true.
It's like you get to a restaurant and go, well, are you reading the menu or not, because I've had enough today.
Do you find you're at home, you're going, I'm going to smuggle in some kind of English teaching here and teach them to read and write?
Oh my God. Well, lockdown, when we have to teach. Oh, it's terrible at homeschooling. I really thought I'd be quite good at it, because I'm quite, you know, I wanted to quite a lot be a Blue Peter presenter when I was growing up, and I'm quite like cheerful and I quite like craft. And I thought, I'm going to nail this. I'm going to absolutely smash it. And I was so frustrated. And because they teach everything very differently to the way we were taught in schools. Mm. Yeah, I was not a good lockdown teacher.
So what kind of things are they teaching them? When you say it's kind of social learning and stuff, what kind of things are you learning in a Danish primary school or whatever the equivalent is?
Well, they're doing a unit on habitats right now, and they've done units on space. I mean, it's just weird that they know about Greek mythology, but they don't know how to spell Greek mythology. I mean, it's just odd. It's an odd combination.
So they'll be talking to you about different Greek myths, but can't read and write yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And tonight, when I was putting my son to bed, he said, you better let me go to sleep or I'll have your guts for garters. I was like, all right, thanks. And then he was like, and I'll have your nose for a hose. And then he just started rhyming all these bits of bodies he was going to. I mean, it's just odd, the level and the the things that they pick up, it's just strange.
And so would you, if you brought those kids back into the UK now, it'd be a real kind of culture. They'd go to school and this teacher would be like, well, I don't know what group to put them in. They're both the cleverest and the least clever child I've ever taught at the age of eight.
Yeah. Just sat in the back smoking a cigar, completely illiterate, but talking about the pros and cons of different philosophers.
Well, and also because they're very open to risk. So my son goes to Scouts, and I got a message from the teacher, from the Scout leader last week saying, on Wednesday, we'll make a campfire, bring daggers. So like they're all tooled up. They can use swords and axes. And they have their own knives.
Bring daggers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I live in East London and the schools are very similar to that. Yeah.
Little Danish roadmen at Scout. But the thing is, they're quite brutal with animals as well, because the Copenhagen Zoo got in trouble, didn't they, with the giraffe and stuff like that. And what they exposed kids to, you can correct me on this, but they had too many giraffes, so they killed the giraffe and then they basically dissected it in front of school groups.
Yeah. What?
And so school kids could go and watch a giraffe, and they'd cut open the giraffe and go and look at all its organs. Is that right, Helen?
Yeah, that's right. Marius. R.I.P. Marius. Yes, yeah.
they do that.
But you know what? No Danes were surprised at all. And every Dane I speak to will have a story from their youth, from a school trip where they said, oh, yeah, we went to go and see a lion get dissected. Or like, yeah, we went round an abattoir as our school trip when we were in middle school. So it's just very normal.
Wow.
No wonder they don't teach them to write. Imagine the complaints they'd get at the diary entry.
Well, you mean Nordic noir is no surprise at all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, imagine, what did you do at school stage? So my teacher shank up a lion. And so your kids might be too young for that, but have they been to anything like that? Like the seven-year-old has seen any of that kind of stuff?
He hasn't yet, but because we're in the countryside, I mean, there's a lot of roadkill, so we see quite a lot of dead stuff hanging about. And he's sort of, yeah, I got his head around that. And I guess it's better that he learns that way than, you know, learning it first when a close relative dies or someone you love dies.
Yeah.
Yeah, so teaching about death.
They don't dissect them as well, do they? Helen, it seems a bit too brutal.
I'll check.
Bad news, Nan's gone, but science is looking lively next week. It's biology called smoke sorted.
This is from a very personal, just my own interest. How would it be for me out there as a vegetarian?
Well, I would like to tell you that 8 years ago, it would have been terrible and you would have starved and only eaten Danish pastries. However, recently, it's got a lot better. I think Copenhagen's fine and there's everything. And Aarhus is another big city where there's everything. But where I am, there was no provision for vegetarians when I first came here. You'd get you'd ask for the salad or a vegetarian salad and there'd be sort of chicken on sprinkled on top. Comprehension. And people sometimes thought the chicken didn't count. So that was bad. But now we've got a vegetarian restaurant. There's vegetarian options. So yeah, it's fine now. There's kimchi in the supermarket.
Oh yeah,
you have you sorted, Josh. That's all. You need a bit of kimchi.
I love a bit of kimchi. Yeah, it's alive. It is alive, isn't it? I don't understand the science of it.
Your three Ks: your kefir, your kombucha, and your kimchi. We haven't got kombucha yet here yet.
This is the most Guardian this podcast has ever gone.
Sorry.
Do you know what, Helen? The biggest surprise is that Rob booked you. This is a booking that I would have made. This is an absolutely perfect Josh booking. Like, when Rob suggested you, I was like, what, has my phone gone wrong? And I've texted myself. I don't understand how this has happened.
Well, you know, I always started off this podcast because I wanted to know if you could get kombucha in Danish supermarkets. And now I know, you know, so this is complete for me.
No.
But can you imagine the cost of it? It's pretty punchy in London.
Oh, my God. It would be 20 quid, no problem, yeah.
What, for a kombucha? I mean, I don't even know what it is, but I don't want to spend 20 quid on it. What's kombucha? Is that the drink?
It's like fermented tea. Is that right, Josh?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, sure.
Yes,
of course he knows.
Well, my, I'll be honest with you. My mother-in-law is all over the 3Ks.
What? She racist? You guys spent too much info about your horrendously racist mother-in-law. But let's not get bogged down by that. Everyone's got a past. Childcare. With the kids and stuff like that, what's the birthday party score? Because we were speaking about this. Isn't it led by the teachers at the school, birthday parties for kids? Because in the UK, it's an absolute political nightmare. it's like a cobra meeting with your partner trying to organise it, who to invite and what and stuff like that. How does it work in Denmark?
It is brilliant. So tomorrow, my twins have got a birthday party, but all it means is that I don't have to make them a packed lunch, which making three packed lunches a day is a real ball ache. So they are going to go to their daycare and then the parents of the birthday girl will take them to their home. And they will have a party for an hour of chaos and cake. And then they will come back to school and I will pick them up. And then that will be done.
Oh, my God. That is the dream.
Yeah. And I haven't quite been able to do it yet because it's been locked down for their birthdays and various things. But yeah, it's the dream.
So if it was your kids' birthday, you'd go to the daycare and get all the kids in that class.
But you also get the teachers. So you're getting that supervision as well.
And then you just come to your house and have a party and then done in an hour. Yeah. And then the teachers take them back and you can tidy up.
Yeah. Lovely.
Oh my God, that is the dream.
Yeah.
And are all the parties the same?
They're not really sort of entertainers and all that. You literally come round, have some food, run around and break some stuff and then go.
And what's it been like with people coming over and visiting you then? With keeping in touch with friends and stuff, like, have you kept in touch with them? Do they come and visit you? Because I've got friends that have like moved to Cambridge and I've visited them once in 3 years.
So you're telling me you're a terrible friend. That's how
yes, I am.
I'd say pre-COVID, we did quite well. It was quite busy. The summer months, quite busy. But yeah, it's very interesting. You do see people who I thought were some of our best friends have just not visited at all. And people who I hadn't thought it was a particularly close bond have been over loads and we've become a lot closer during that time. So yeah, it definitely highlights things, I think.
When they turned up, the people without the close bond, we were like, what are you doing here? Why have you turned up? I hardly know
Free
you.
Free holiday, isn't it?
Look, I know the Wow Centre's around the corner.
It's not called the Wow Centre.
The Wow Centre sounds
it's
like an
the
STD
park.
Clinic.
The Wow
Park. I've got to pop down the Wow Centre. I had a bit of a busy one last weekend. Set fingers crossed I'm all right. So there's no plans to move back at the moment? You're happy where you are with the kids and stuff like that?
I don't know. It's a really good place to raise kids and it's very hot. There's no reason to leave other than that I'm not Danish. My Danish is not brilliant. I'm not sure this will ever feel completely like home, but it'll be a big wrench when we do.
Of course. And what with the rest of the education, how does it work? Is it state paid for university? Is that correct?
Yeah, you get to study for free till you're 18. And then after the age of 18, you get paid to study with student grants.
No way.
So yeah, they still get all that. And
oh really?
Yeah, it's everything is a pretty good deal compared to other places.
Yeah, that sounds like a sort of a panicked Daily Mail hell headline of like mad lefties with plan to pay kids to go to uni. pay for piss up by the taxpayer.
But I suppose if you're a student, it must be. I was paying £1.60 a pint when I was a student, and those students are looking at £7 to £10
oh,
a pint.
Yeah, Jesus.
Well, I think interestingly, you can buy beer and stuff from the age of 16, and then it's spirits is from 18. But I did a piece for The Guardian, about Gen Z, and I followed this girl when she was turned 16 for her birthday party, and she had to do as many shots as her age, so she had to do 16 shots, and then her mum gave her a puke bag to do the puke into, and apparently this was tradition when you turn 16 in Denmark. And then I caught up with her again as she turned 21 this year, and she said, "Yeah, we don't do that so much now." So I think it has changed a little bit, I think, the drinking culture.
Wow, I was going to say, good luck on a 50th, your last one. Shit-faced.
Free healthcare, fine.
Yeah. So that was a bit old school, a bit of an old school tradition on the 16th then.
Yeah, I mean, it's still quite boozy. It's pretty boozy. And actually for your 25th birthday, if you're not married, and none of them are married by 25, they get tied to a lamppost and someone throws cinnamon at you. Just because.
All right, Helen, you've won your bet. We'll believe anything, okay?
So is that boys and girls at 12, men and women at 25?
Yeah, it used to be, I think traditionally it was because if sailors went to sea to find spices, this is what I've been told by the Viking people, and if they weren't married, you'd throw the spices back at them. And then they just included it to women, very egalitarian, and chuck them. But this means the streets smell lovely the next day. It's great.
Yeah, just people tied to lampposts getting pelted with cinnamon. Would you be up for that, Josh? Is that something you'd like?
Well, is it ground or is it sticks? What kind?
It's ground. It's ground.
It's ground. Okay.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, it does smell nice, doesn't it, cinnamon? If I had to choose something from the spice drawer to be thrown at me on my 25th birthday, it'd be in the top three. One thing I'm kind of like interested in is that obviously they come top of these studies of happiness and stuff like that. But obviously that's a statistical thing, or it's people answering a survey or something. Would you say on your day-to-day life, you can feel that about people? Do you know what I mean? You can feel a different atmosphere.
Yeah, I think Danes feel very lucky to be born in Denmark because they're all very well educated because all this education is free and they travel a lot back when we could travel. So they do see the rest of the world and see what a good deal they have on the whole. But also Denmark, it's not necessarily that they're the happiest, but they're the least unhappy. So many of the reasons for unhappiness have been taken away, like, you know, job insecurity or health insecurity. Because this welfare state looks after people, there are fewer reasons to fall through the net and not be looked after. So they have a really nice baseline to work from. So I think, yeah, most people are, they're not sort of wandering around singing zippity-doo-dah, but they are pretty content with their life, I'd say.
And there's not people that have been really sort of left on their own in society to sort of, you know, sort of suffer as much as are in other countries. So I imagine the mean average of happy is a lot higher. There's not people in terrible situations bringing down the average.
Yeah, I think so. And it, you know, it's not perfect by any means. There's still like many of the challenges that other countries face. And I just wrote a new chapter for the end of the Year of Living Danishly, updating since I moved here. And actually, you know, they've got a racism problem the same as many countries have. There's not this egalitarian idea, and that everyone is equal doesn't always apply when it comes to people from different countries. So as an immigrant, me coming here as a blonde-haired, middle-class white woman, I had a different experience that I have learned than people coming from like Syria or from Turkey. Yeah, it's not perfect by any means, but
of course,
the theory is that everyone pays their taxes so that everyone is looked after. That's the goal.
And you've written a few other books as well, Helen, if you wanted to mention them. A lot of it is about being happy and How to Be Sad is your most recent book, is that correct?
Yeah, so I was basically, back when we could travel, I was going around the world talking about my books and speaking to people and being on panels and talking about happiness. And
you did a TED Talk. That's very exciting, Helen, a TED Talk.
Did a TED Talk. Thanks very much. What happiness looks like around the world. But I would speak to people and they would ask how they could be happy. And often at times in their life when really this wasn't possible, like if they just lost a loved one or been made redundant. And I came to realize that many of us have a very narrow definition of happiness that means never being sad. And that is not possible. And actually, if we try and suppress our so-called negative thoughts, it actually exacerbates them and makes it worse. And there are some good things about being sad. It can make us kinder and more clear-eyed. And it's really how we have to live, because sadness happens to all of us, and especially teaching kids to be okay with sadness felt really important. So yeah, that's what I've been working on. And I think personally, I've had, my little sister died when I was little, so I have been aware of sadness for a long time, but trying to research into happiness and having kids myself really brought it all into relief for me, how important it is to deal with these emotions, even with kids, even when we think kids can't understand these things.
Yeah,
we do have to talk to kids about sad stuff too.
Yeah, of course. I think having kids is sort of a lot of stuff in your past that you sort of have dealt with and haven't dealt with sort of rears its head, because you have to go through certain life events that you've sort of hidden away. When you're running around and your career's the most important thing in your life, all of a sudden you have to think about first days of school or when something bad happened or someone at school did this and that, and it takes you back there. So I think it sometimes creeps up on you once you have kids. You sort of think you're pretty chill, but all other things start popping up. I don't know if you found that.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's like losing a layer of skin, isn't it? Having kids. I mean, suddenly, yeah. I mean, just the teariness gets like cranked up a notch.
Yeah.
And just everything. Yeah. I felt everything a lot more once I'd had kids.
You're more vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because before, it's just you. You're out there on your own. You've got no real responsibilities. Before you know it, you've got, you know, it's like going outside without your wind coat on, I imagine, in a Jutland.
I wouldn't know, Rob.
Your balaclava's just to the left, you know.
And so if you came back to the UK, do you think you'd live a different life in the UK to the one you were living before you left?
Yes, I think so, because my kids would be used to such a different way of life. I mean, they'd be tooled up with their daggers for one thing, but you know, it would be more outdoorsy. And I think I would be mindful of, you know, actually, and from my kind of professional work and a lot of the research I've done into emotions and mood, that actually I'm aware now that we are not more productive when we work all of the hours that we are sent. the Malcolm Gladwell study, the 10,000 hours thing, a lesser reported part of that study showed that the more successful people actually are the ones who rested more. And so I think the Danes are really good on that. They work hard and then they play hard and they sleep. I'd do that a bit more.
I think so. That's my new approach from reading your book and doing stuff like calming down, Helen. That's my new approach. Josh is still rewriting chapters of his book at 3 a.m. after a night feed.
Oh.
Which I'd argue is not the art of living Danishly.
It is hard though. And I'm not some higher level being these days. I'm speaking to you right now from a cupboard because in Scandinavia nobody has carpets or curtains, so everything's very echoey. I'm in a cupboard. But this is where the Swedes have a phrase, your smultronställe, your symbolic strawberry patch, and it's a place everyone has in their house where they can escape to when it's all too much. And so once people have kids, they have either a cupboard that they hide in or in the car. And so I'm in this cupboard, which has become mine. And there have been times, when the kids are little and they're all screaming and there's so many of them and they're so loud. In this cupboard, I can see right now, a gin miniature and a packet of Nicorette chewing gum that a friend sent me when she said, you don't sound like you're coping. I'm going to send this to you. I've never smoked. She just said it might just take the edge off.
So, so from the happiest place in the world, just sat in a cupboard with gin and Nicorette, even though you don't smoke.
Yeah, but it's nice. It's nice to know it's there if I need it.
I was going to say, though, I think just by the Scandinavians and the Swedish having a word for that place you escape to just shows we haven't even got a word for it in England.
Yeah.
I have. It's called the corner of the spare bedroom behind the washing is where I lie when it's near bedtime to get away from everyone, but I haven't got a word. So what's the name of that place that you hide?
It's called a smultronställe. It's a symbolic strawberries patch, but yeah.
A symbolic strawberry patch. Yeah. Okay, I'll have to call it that from now on. Where do you go and hide, Josh, before you
Where
ask?
Do I go and hide?
Yeah.
Don't tell, because then they'll know.
I don't know. Where do I go and hide? Obviously, I'll take a lot longer on a piss than I actually need. Yeah. Does that count?
Yeah.
But it would be very bleak to say the toilet. That's the worst place to hide in the world.
Yeah, the best advice someone gave me is never rush a shit, because that is something that you got to stand firm with that. Take your time.
But I wish I'd done is I wish in the first years of my relationship before we'd had children, I'd taken longer in the toilet so that the comparison in times wasn't as stark as it is.
Yes, you should have. Yeah, that's a good tip. Build up the length in the toilet just so it's not a shock when it comes around.
That's a long game, isn't it?
It is a long game. It's a long, to anyone without children listening, that's my happiness tip. So I'd say listen to Helen rather than listening to me.
Yeah.
We say I made book changes at 3 a.m. after night feed, which is true, but you were writing books which have all the kind of things that could be said to be all-encompassing. That would be one of the kind of jobs that would be. Do you find you're able to at 4 p.m. close the laptop and not work for the rest of the day and do stuff like that?
It's really hard, but I haven't had a choice. So I think it's very good for things like, writer's block. I can't afford to have writer's block because I know that by 4 p.m. my kids will be out on the street. So I really have to go and pick them up. So yeah, I'll sometimes wake up in the middle of the night with a thought, oh, I wish I'd done this, or I should put this in something. But it's just not an option. So yeah. I have had to just work within that parameter.
I've always thought writer's block's bollocks.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's just people that are lazy or not got enough on. My writer's block really cleared up when I was due to be in the pub at 8 o'clock and I needed to get another 100 words or what, 200, 500 words done.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing with kids, though, isn't it? You work so much more effectively when you've got kids, because I found that with stand-up, where I was like, oh, I've got to actually properly write this stuff for this gig because I've only got this many gigs until I'm doing the tour. And it just makes you focus. And that's kind of like the Danish thing of just 8 till 4, you will focus. Are you going on Facebook less? Are you doing all that kind of extra stuff less during that time?
Yeah, I'm trying to. And I think in Danish workplaces, there is far less of a culture of just spending time on Facebook and just wasting time that way. I try to do that. But as with if you're freelance and you're trying to, if you make anything and you have to then try and get it out into the world, I have to do social media for that. And I fall down rabbit holes just as much as anyone.
Yeah,
so
that's hard.
That's tricky. But yeah.
So obviously, because you're freelancing and working at home, do you notice that your husband who goes to a Danish workplace, has he become slightly different to you in different approaches to work because he's sort of surrounded by it where you are working on your own most of the time?
I think I'm quite disciplined because I've had to be. And he, when it was proper lockdown, he had to be at home. I think he found it really hard to be like, what are you doing? Should we have a cup of tea? No, go and do some work. But I think the only real thing, and I'm not sure this quite answers your question, is that he now speaks with a sort of a pan-continental accent. To try and make yourself understood when there is people have all different language backgrounds, he speaks very clearly, whereas I can still waffle very fast in a very obviously British accent.
So he's done the reverse Schmeichel.
But a lot of football managers, when they do go and manage abroad, they get like the mickey taken out of them when they're getting interviewed in this country, because they're sort of, and we play the game and we win in the first half and then lose in the second. They're sort of this weird, they sort of doing an impression of a Danish person speaking the second language, which is English. So is it sort of a bit more of a deliberate, more European accent he's got now?
I think that's right, yeah. It's deliberate, yeah. That's the word, yeah.
Deliberate, slow and deliberate.
Yeah.
Okay, it sounds like one of my reviews.
At least you were deliberate.
Yeah, exactly. I meant it.
No one's ever described you as slow, Rob.
Too fast. Shut up, mate.
I was in the car by 9:30.
When I first started doing comedy, I did a gig at a competition. You remember, Josh, I used to be so fast to the point it was actually a style more so than just a speech pattern. And my dad, after the gig, come over to me and, are you on gear? Because he thought I'd done coke because I was speaking so fast. I was just nervous.
Helen, it's been genuinely, I'd say, one of the most fascinating conversations we've had, and I include Joe Swash in that.
Oh, I love it. Thanks, Helen. It's been amazing. We have got one last question we like to ask everyone, which is involved. Is it Lego Man you refer to him as your partner?
Yeah.
Lego Man. What's the one thing that Lego Man does parenting-wise that really frustrates you, but you've not brought it up because it might cause an argument? This is your opportunity to get it off your chest now, in case Lego Man has a listen.
Yeah. I think I have brought up many of the things, so I'm trying to think of a fresh one. I think, so he has a life mantra that he picked up working in a pub in Sheffield growing up, which he now brings into our home more often than I would relish. And he's not very good at resting, because his boss in the Sheffield pub used to say, if you've got time to lean, you've got time to clean.
Okay.
And so he basically, if anyone's sort of trying to sit down, if the kids are watching telly and I sit down with them, or if anyone's just not doing something for a minute, he'll be, you've got time to lean, time to clean, and he wants us doing things. And
it's a bit annoying as well, especially when something like that. You've heard that for like probably 10-15 years.
Yeah, long time.
And you're not gonna get a 3-year-old to clean. They might
take that on as my mantra. I've learned the wrong thing from this conversation, but genuinely, that is a great rhyming mantra, and I'm gonna stick with it.
There must be a better mantra he can pick up at Lego. Surely, fucking hell, he's still riding out the pub landlord's one.
I know. We'll go with everything is awesome instead. But
yeah, everything's awesome. Perfect, Helen. Thank you so much.
It's been brilliant.
Where can you get the books? Is that they paperback now? The latest
still one? Hardback. How to Be Sad, but the others are all out on paperback. I'm at Ms. Helen Russell on the socials, and books are wherever you get your books.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much,
Helen.
Lovely
to speak to you. Take care.
Helen Russell there. The Guardian journalist and author, Josh, a stiff neck booking by a stiff neck in loose neck clothing.
And next week, Rob, I've booked Vicky Patterson. it's a cultural exchange.
Queen of the jungle, she was.
Was she?
Yeah, it's weird. Ooh. And then it was followed up by Scarlett Moffat. It was a double Geordie lass.
Well, I watched the Scarlett Moffat one because that was the Joel one, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Danny Baker had an argument with the guy from Holmes Under the Hammer. That was my year, Rob.
That was the year you watched it, wasn't it?
That was the year I watched
it. Did you know Vicky Patterson off the top of your head, or have you had that prepared, that joke, and you've researched an appropriate person?
I've got writers in. I love that, and I'm going to buy Helen's books now.
Yes, they're really, really good, and she's a lovely lady, and I love Copenhagen. I always go there, and I've taken the kids.
So tell me all about it.
Well, there's the Tivoli World in the middle of it, but it's just very chilled. I just like the atmosphere. It is, like what she was saying, it's just a bit more relaxed, and it's not that everyone's happier. It's just that there's a lot less to worry about. So people are naturally a lot more, it's not like, oh, where are we going to get the money for uni? And you, there are private schools, but the education system's so good. There's not people going, oh, we've got to send them here or there and stuff like that. And it's even more so, I imagine, in the countryside because she's in the middle of nowhere than Copenhagen. But little tip, do not go to Copenhagen on the 2nd of January because it is, in the words of the person in the hotel, it shuts, everyone leaves. And he wasn't wrong. It was all shut.
Oh, Rob, what a birthday.
I know, 2nd of January, the worst birthday ever. We took a six-month-old to Copenhagen and then we were like, just because it's just so chilled, just pushing around. They end up in this bar. We had a couple of drinks and then like everyone started coming in. And then after about an hour, we didn't realise it was basically in a nightclub with a six-month-old that was asleep.
I just put on the windsuit and head out, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, just pop the windsuit in, off we go. But no, she's great, Helen, and definitely buy her books. And and now we know the names for all the Danish pastries.
Yes.
All right, we need to wrap this up. Right, speak to you on Tuesday.
See you then. Bye.
Bye.